Hey, Wisconsin. We're trying a little bit of a different format for this podcast today. I'm Renee Riddle, the State Communications Director for Senator Ron Johnson. So I'm here with my boss to talk about the accomplishments of the 115th Congress. We're wrapping up 2 years that people may think it was very partisan and not a lot got done, but you would debunk that, right? Quite a few accomplishments.
There's a fair amount of partisanship, but no, we actually governed as Republicans. I think probably the thing we're most proud of is just the state of the economy. In Wisconsin, we have 2.9% unemployment rate. All the credit goes to Scott Walker and people like Leah Vukmir, people that have the courage and integrity to actually enact the reforms to turn the state around. Then on a national level, we're at 3.7% unemployment. The last 2 years under the previous administration, business investment averaged 0.6% growth per quarter in the last 2 years. In the first 6 quarters of this administration, business investment has increased at 7.3% on average. That's an order of magnitude better. And that's the type of investment you need to really lay the foundation for future economic growth. So it didn't just happen. It really is an attitude in Wisconsin. Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Clayfish would often say, Wisconsin, we're open for business. Nationally, we stopped punishing success. We stopped adding to the regulatory burden. We've actually reduced it a little bit, 16 different congressional review acts that reduced the regulatory burden by almost $50 billion over the last couple of years. And of course, we made our tax system more competitive. So it's that attitude of actually embracing and making America and Wisconsin an attractive place for business investment and risk-taking and job creation, and then just good, solid policies that got the government off businesses' back and made the tax system more competitive. Those are some really solid accomplishments that I think every Republican should be proud of.
And when it comes to tax reform, you really had to take a stand when it came to pass-through businesses, and you didn't want to let it go through without addressing that. In fact, a plumber just came to my house, and he said, tell your boss, thank you, because that is directly affecting his bottom line, and he's very grateful.
Well, in Washington, D.C., of course, it's the big C-corps, the big businesses, the Fortune 500 companies that can afford to have, the lobbyists that are really, right there in these committees and making sure that they get a good tax break and that they can be competitive internationally, and I'm all for it. But what was left behind there was the 95% of smaller businesses that are pass-through entities. The business income is passed through to the individual and paid for at the individual level, and we just weren't taking care of them. Everything was focused on the 20% tax rate for C-corps, and we left those pass-throughs behind. So yeah, I had to kind of dig my heels in and really stand up and advocate for the small businesses, and unfortunately my colleagues listened, and we were able to narrow that disparity between the tax cuts for the C-corps and the pass-throughs, and kept them more competitive.
Absolutely, and a lot of people are grateful for that. Let's talk about your chairmanship of a pretty big committee, HSGAC, Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. How did that go for this Congress?
I took over the chairmanship 4 years ago, and again, being a business guy, I like mission statements, so we developed a mission statement. It's pretty simple, to enhance the economic and national security of America. You need a strong economy, which we have, if you're going to be secure nationally. And then under that mission statement, we have four primary goals: addressing border security, cybersecurity, protecting our critical infrastructure, and countering terrorism, any kind of violent extremism. And so we focus a lot of our hearings trying to lay out, as a business person, lay out all the information, do root cause analysis, that type of thing. Just recently, we had a pretty good couple of legislative achievements with the five-year FAA reauthorization bill, which, by the way, that's the first time we've had a five-year authorization in years, five-year reauthorization on a highway bill as well. Again, good governance with Republicans in charge. But I was able to get our emerging threats bill, which really allowed and gave DHS the authority to begin countering malign use of drones. I was shocked when I heard that law enforcement has no capability even studying the problem. Plus we have the Disaster Recovery Reform Act, which really lays out and provides the right framework for how do you respond to these natural disasters. It really starts with local responders. When they are overwhelmed, states step in, and when state and local responders are overwhelmed, then FEMA steps in. And as long as we keep that structure in place, first of all, state and local governments are going to be far better prepared. They can do some pre-planning to help mitigate any kind of harm of a natural disaster, and then FEMA can be ready for the major disasters, not be running, you know, all over the country with every little thing that occurs.
I know with the drone security, you said you were shocked at how ill-prepared we were, and that's something the NFL even came in and testified. They were pushing for that.
We've seen some drones coming to stadiums now, luckily just dropping leaflets as opposed to, you know, something really bad. So no, this was just a necessary first step. And, you know, in Washington, D.C., nothing's easy, so even that took a little bit of muscling through the process, but we got that accomplished. But, you know, the other thing I think I've been pretty well shocked ever since I arrived in Washington, D.C., is how we've been hollowing our military under the previous administration. So that's another signature achievement by Republicans in this administration. We stopped hollowing out the military, started rebuilding it, and that's necessary. The world's a very dangerous place. I can't remember in my lifetime when just geopolitics are so complex, and there's so many threats coming from so many different areas, and the world looks to America to lead, and we need to have the resources, and we need to certainly provide the resources for the finest among us, first of all, to keep them safe so they can keep us safe.
Switching gears just a little bit, one of your guests for the State of the Union was Lori Bedura. And her cause has been this opioid crisis, which has really gripped our state and the nation.
The epidemic of overdoses from opioids and other substances is a national tragedy. 2 years ago, it was 62,000. Last year, 74,000 people lost their lives. Lori Bedura certainly touched my life because her life was touched when her son Archie died of an opioid overdose. My own nephew died of what we believe is probably fentanyl. This is a huge problem. It's one of the reasons we have to secure our borders to stem the tide of for example, opium heroin coming in from Mexico. So we've, again, Republican Congress, we've passed two pretty major bills trying to address this, grant money to local and state governments, figure out, you know, what's the best treatment, how can you help local responders in terms of you know, their efforts combating this scourge. But again, those are two important pieces of legislation, but we've certainly been shining the light on this and making sure that everybody's aware of it, because this affects every community in our nation. There's every demographic, every income strata, everybody's affected by this.
And this will stay on the Senate's radar going into the next
Oh, yeah, well, until we fix the problem, which we're probably not going to fix anytime soon.
Also in the healthcare vein, right to try. That was a biggie Senator Johnson.
That was a really wonderful achievement. Started when I met Trickett Wendler, who came in. She was a mom of three beautiful children. Her and her husband Tim came in with a group of ALS patients. She had ALS. She lost her battle in I think March of 2015. But Tim and a bunch of other patients continue to fight for their right to try drugs that have already passed phase one, the safety approval of FDA, but just haven't gone through phase two and three. And so what Right to Try does is it gives people without any other treatment options, don't qualify for clinical trials, the right to access those types of experimental drugs or treatments that the manufacturer's willing to let them use without an FDA bureaucrat saying no. So it takes a little bit of power away from the FDA and gives patients and their families that power, a little bit of hope, a little bit of freedom. And again, that was a heavy lift. That was not easy to get done, but this is one case where President Trump's leadership was just crucial. He embraced that in the State of the Union, and a few months later we got that signed into law. That was a very, very gratifying moment.
I know all of us on our staff, we had a lot of fun watching you as you were the first one to your feet when the president mentioned Right to Try in the State of the Union.
I had no idea he was going to do that. Yeah. When we started talking about it, I'm starting to think, I think he's talking about Right to Try. And so I was, as soon as I heard Right to Try, I was like a jack in the box. Yeah.
And then on the bill signing day, President Trump said of you that it was thanks to your leadership as well. He said that Ron, he never gives up, he never stops. He was impressed with how you pushed it.
I'm reasonably tenacious. I think most of my colleagues realize that.
Very tenacious, but you had a good reason to be, because Trickett really affected you.
Well, let's face it, it's the main credit goes to people like Trickett and Frank Mangiello, Matt Bellina, Jordan McGlynn, his mom Laura, Tim Wendler. I mean, all these people that have been advocating for years in the states, getting Right to Try bills passed in the state, and then finally we needed that national bill so the state bills could actually operate properly. So it really is the patients and their families that really deserve the lion's share of the credit for getting this thing passed. We were just the legislators and the administration that got it done.
But what were you thinking when you were in the audience watching them up with the president, watching that bill signed? What was going through your mind?
Well, first thing is I wish there was a drug to help heal all of them. But I know that's not possible. I do know Right to Try will save some lives. I can't predict how many. I can't predict with what kind of conditions. It's going to be very drug, very disease specific. I wish there was a ready cure for ALS right now, because ALS patients were some of the most tireless advocates for this. It's probably one of the more difficult diseases to address, though.
Let's talk about judicial confirmations. Obviously, Supreme Court, big in the news, but it goes much beyond that. This Congress set a record, 84 confirmations by President Trump, approved by the Senate.
First of all, President Trump is nominating judges. Not super legislators, not judicial activists, but just judges. People that have the modesty and integrity to stay within their Article III powers of applying the law, interpreting it, not making it, not making policy. And so he's just nominating just extraordinary men and women for the federal bench. And so we've now confirmed 2 Supreme Court justices, 29 Circuit Court justices, I think that's a record, and I think 53 District Court judges. And this is against severe obstruction by the Democrats, but we're dedicated to doing this. We do want to populate the courts with judges. Now, one difference between conservatives and liberals is liberals want judicial activists. The policy they can't enact because it's not popular enough through legislative means, they want judges to enact it in the courts. I don't want that. I realize in confirming a judge to any court, I'm not going to like a lot of those judges' decisions, because they're going to be applying the law, and there's a lot of bad law that I want to change, but it's my job to change it in the legislature, not rely on judges to do it for me.
So looking ahead, it was a busy 2 years. Pretty proud of what you were able to accomplish?
Well, I'm never satisfied. I wish we could have really completely fixed Obamacare. We've made some progress. We repealed the individual mandate. We repealed the Independent Payment Advisory Board. We've now, through regulation, established associated health plans. So now Americans, if they're on the individual market, can join an association and buy healthcare with pre-tax dollars. The most recent ones with short-term limited duration plans for those people who've been completely priced out of individual market. Now they have a free market alternative, far cheaper than anything available on the Obamacare exchanges. So, we're chipping away. I certainly wish we were addressing the debt and deficit in a more effective way by making Social Security and Medicare and all the healthcare spending more sustainable, primarily by attacking the root cause, which is out of control healthcare costs, by reinjecting free market discipline into that market. Reconnecting the consumer of the payment with the product, or the consumer of the product with the payment of the product, that's really how you start bringing healthcare costs under control.
Well, you have 4 more years, so I'm sure your to-do list will be quite long for those 4 years. So just finally, what's it like to represent Wisconsin and Washington, D.C.?
Well, first of all, it's a true honor. And what's nice about the state of Wisconsin is people are just so nice. It's just true. I remember Charles Krauthammer was at an event in Kohler, and he started out his speech saying, "You always hear Minnesota nice. I say Wisconsin even nicer." Now, I'm originally from Minnesota many, many years ago, and they are nice people. But it is true. Wisconsin people are just so incredibly decent. They have such common sense, and they're just nice. We are in very partisan divided times, but I still, to this day, 8 years into this process, I can count probably on 2 hands the number of times people come up to me individually in an airport or on the street and been obnoxious. People don't really like my policies, they just don't really say anything. More people come up to me and with well wishes, and the number one thing people say to me is, "We're praying for you, you're in our prayers." And I give everybody hope.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sitting down with us and reviewing the past 2 years and all the accomplishments. And we look forward to seeing what's in store for the 116th Congress.
Me too.
All right. Thanks, everyone.